Welcome to the Ice Lab Podcast. We are your hosts, Michael Marinaro and Trent Michaud.
We are going to take you deep into our labs, as well as many different high-performance professionals we've connected with on our journey as we strive for excellence. Another episode of the Ice Lab Podcast. What is this, 15, Mike?
15, I think. All the way up to 15 episodes.
Yeah, look at us go. Just flying now, eh? Time flies when you're having fun, right?
Exactly. We're making it up as we go, and people are still listening, so success.
Perfect. So how's the week been? Big weekend we had of disc golf, eh, Mikey?
Yes, big weekend. I had Trent on my bag caddying for me for the disc golf tournament. He drove an hour out to the event to walk around, carry my bag, dry my discs off. Was a big help. Was a bit of a struggle. Finished 33rd out of 48 players. Moved up a division. So not the best, but onwards and upwards.
Yeah, and I've never played this course before. Mike's never played this course before, so Saturday was definitely a big learning curve, just learning the course, and then Sunday you definitely played better, just knowing a little bit more of it, eh?
Yes, was definitely better on Sunday after not playing blind. It was a lot of par fours and fives on a golf course, so going 800-900 feet away, not knowing where you're going, wasn't the most ideal preparation. But Sunday, I definitely did much better.
Yeah, no, it was pretty awesome to see, and also crazy to see. It was a Tier A event, so that was pretty cool to see. You know, Eric Oakley, you go and play the course. Mike hits plus seven. We're pretty happy with that. And then this guy's throwing minus 14. He's birdieing every hole except for like two or three. It's pretty insane to see the difference in the real pros and what we think we're doing, right?
Yeah, a couple top U.S. Celebrity players, we can say, were there. So it was pretty cool to meet some big names.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thanks for having me out with you, buddy.
Appreciate it.
Awesome. So we just want to give a quick shout out because this week is Nationals Coaches Week. So we want to give a shout out to all those coaches who are listening and make sure to anybody who has a coach to please say thank you to them. They do so much for us. They are a big part of our lives, a big influence in our lives. And, you know, they don't just change us for the sport. They change us as people and for the better. So, you know, to all of my coaches, Allison, Drew, Alex, Bruno, Mr. Mack, everybody out there, thank you very much for what you guys do.
Speaking of coaches, we have a pretty special guest on today, one who has influenced me in many ways on and off the ice. He is a former national team member, a junior world bronze medalist. I'll keep the year out of there. It was just a couple years ago. And world and Olympic champion coach, my coach, the stud himself, Mr. Bruno Marcotte. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Mikey, what's up?
Thanks for coming on, big guy.
Cool. No, I'm so happy. I'm honored you asked me, and I'm really looking forward to spend this next hour with you guys. And no, it's going to be fun time.
We didn't spend enough time together today, so 8 o'clock Monday night, another hour sounds good.
Exactly.
Awesome. So, Bruno, for the listeners who don't know much about you, let's get started right from out of your, you know, competitive career as an athlete. Where did you start coaching and how did you get into that? Like, did you decide you were going to be a coach right out of the gate or was that something you went to after?
You know, it's crazy. You know, like I started coaching when I was 18 years old and it was at the beginning where skate, you know, back in the days, talk about the years. Way back when, you know, like amateur athletes, we were not allowed to coach. I used to partner dance. We were not even allowed to accept money. People would pay us with gift certificate or whatever. But like, I'm not sure what year the Skate Canada or Sports Canada decided to implement this new program that would allow national team member to be able to coach and to make a bit of money. So when I was 18, I'm like, all right, let's go. Let's start coaching so I can support my skating. I used to referee some hockey, actually quite a bit. And to be able to be able to afford skating, I had many jobs. But skating was the one that I guess I was the most natural at. So for many years, I used to coach like part-time, help out other coaches. So my last year that I skated was in 2002. Skate Canada had a program of they would have seminars all around the country. And that would include, their concept was very cool. That it would include like a national team coach, a national team skater, and a, I'm not sure how they called it, but back then they had three coaches. I guess like they had like Louis Tong, Mary Jane, and Peter Burka. Those were the three coaches that would alternate into those seminars. So I was asked to do a couple of those. And I guess I made a pretty good impression to Mary Jane. And she, I guess, talked to Louis. And then what happened is when I retired, Louis like had me over his house. Like, what are you thinking? Like, oh, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, going on tours. I want to become a, you know, cameraman, you know, I want to like shoot some movies or shoot the news. I had all this plan, you know, in my head. But back then, Lewis was quite good friends with, I'm sure he still is, with Ted Barton and Joanne McLeod. And all of a sudden I got this email if I was interested to start a brand new pair program in Vancouver and to help out with the singles. So I thought it was such a great opportunity. And so I was really lucky, like in 2003, 2004, I moved to Vancouver and became a full-time coach and had such a great mentor and Joanne and Ted. And it was such a, it was the best situation because I had my own thing in pairs. So I could learn from my mistake and learn, you know, I had the freedom to do what I wanted, but at the same time, I was working for Joanne in singles. And so she could, you know, show me, you know, like slowly and, you know, like she gave me so many great opportunities. She sent me to Junior Worlds and a lot of Junior Grand Prix with a lot of single skaters, you know, Kevin, Jeremy Tan, there's more. And then she even took me to the World Championship in 2007 with Mira and, I think Emmanuel was there. So, yeah, it was such a great experience. So, and so that's how I got into coaching.
So you got pretty lucky stumbling upon a mentorship with one of the most legendary coaches in the country at the time and still is today. What lessons did Joanne teach you?
Oh, so many. But I remember when I went there, you know, like for I don't know if you want to call this a job interview, but, you know, like for the first time out, she looked at me and she goes, you know what, Bruno, like with your personality, I don't think it made you the best competitor, but I think it's going to make you a better coach. Whatever that meant. You can ask her. but I don't know. Never left my head. No, I mean, the one thing she taught me is, always be one step ahead, you know, like always be one step ahead of your sport. Try to figure out where the sport's going to be in a couple of years. Be ahead of what your skaters are thinking. Be ahead of what your skater, you know, where they're going. So you can be there and you have the answer when they need those answers or the guidance. That's another great thing I use every day. But you know, Joanne was great. I mean, she was tough with me, you know, like in the fact that she expected a lot out of me. But you know, I think it just made me a better coach.
And then, so how important do you think that is for, you know, anybody who's getting into coaching or to find a strong mentor to kind of start them and guide them all along their path to whatever their intentions are as a coach?
I think it's crucial, you know, like in any business or anything you're going to do, you know, like everybody has a mentor. You know what I mean? Like you don't go out of the university. It doesn't matter how amazing your grades were at university. You just don't go and become like, you know, like it's, I think it's important to have a mentor so you can ask, so you can have, you know, like it can guide you, protect you. But at the same time, you know, but it's also important to have a mentor that gives you enough freedom to become your own coach, you know, so you have your own identity, so you become your own self.
Yeah, for sure. Letting yourself make those mistakes when you need to, so you can learn from it. Cause honestly, like, even though as much as you can be told that try not to do that, like don't do this or try not to do this, you have to make some mistakes for yourself first, right? Even as a coach.
Always. I mean, it's part of the learning curve, you know, like it's like, you don't want to make those mistakes, but you know, like I tell Mike all the time, mistakes are part of what we do. It's important that we stay mentally strong, we stay mentally positive, we stay mentally confident in what we do, but it's also important that we learn from those mistakes so we don't repeat the same mistake.
You've taught in many different schools across the country. Many world-renowned coaches have taught with you, alongside you. Is this something that has benefited you in your move to Oakville and you starting your own standalone program after working with so many different high-class individuals?
Oh, definitely. You know, I think I cherish every experience I had in my coaching career. I was very privileged, you know, to spend over 10 years with Richard in Montreal. And, you know, I think we were able to create, you know, like a really strong school for many years. And I think we were very different. And that's what made it good. You know, like we could complement each other. I think I trusted him, he trusted me. So that was great. I think, you know, I would have changed anything in the world. Again, I learned a lot from him. It was awesome. I think after all those years, you know, like for me, you know, like, and Megan, you know, we started a family. So things changed a little bit. I lost my dad. So a lot of things changed in my life. So it took us to Oakville and took us to this new challenge. And I love, you know, challenges. I love, you know, like, I think I was there like 11 or 12 years. I think it was awesome, like amazing, but it's also exciting to start something new.
Yeah, it's a little exciting sometimes to push yourself in some other aspects as well. One thing for myself, obviously, Montreal was always quite a hot spot as I was growing up as a skater, especially for pair skating at the time. And, you know, one thing that was always impressive with your guys' school is you guys had a lot of international teams. You didn't just have a lot of Canadian teams. You had a lot of, you know, U.S., other countries. How was that, you know, for dealing with you guys, because you had, you know, language barriers, working with different federations, it's completely different, you know, having to figure that all and manage that. So, can you take us through some like experiences or like how you guys tried to handle that?
I mean, you know, you're right. you know, it started way back when Richard had those contacts with Poland, he had a lot of different contacts and then brought a lot of people from those countries. And then I started to do the Berlin seminar. For people who don't know, like every year the ISU does a seminar to help develop the smaller countries and try to develop pair skating into the world. So I've been very lucky enough to be doing that for many years for the ISU. And that's been really amazing as far as creating like friends and contacts throughout the world. So obviously that also helped, you know, and again, in all those years that me and Richard were skating together, we always had the skaters at Worlds. We did really well at Worlds. I mean, we, as far as when I was there, our first big success was Narumi and Mervin, who came third in Nice. And then obviously we had Eric and Megan, who just went on after that for many, many medals. And those are the Olympic bronze and the Olympic gold in the para event. So obviously that creates a really amazing exposure. And so that brought a lot of teams. And I think having teams from other country coming in, I think it's amazing. It's like a boost of energy. Whenever you have somebody to come in, like, you know, like the Czech team was coming, it's like a boost of energy for them. It was amazing because then they were so, they felt so privileged to skate with all our top teams. It's also very interesting to see because people over there or every different school, they do things a different way. And even though they came to our school to train with our skaters, to learn from us, for me, it was really important to also to learn from them, you know, like, so I feel that for every team that I work with, I always try to get something out of it and to learn something. So, I think the great thing is we are able to create such positive atmosphere. And that was always the goal. And so whenever a team came from overseas, I think that's the part that they appreciated the most.
Yeah, it definitely helps the athletes on the ice too, as the Japanese have been gone for the past 6 months and they just returned a couple weeks ago. And I forgot just how much I missed them and how much of a benefit it is for us training and the entire school. We feed off of them, they feed off of us. So having that international connection right in Oakville is definitely just beneficial to everybody.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's a good point, Mike. You actually trained with a lot of these people even when you were in Montreal. So, like, even for you, how was the aspect of, you know, there's different cultures and everything? How did you guys keep not the same culture, but try to keep that culture, you know, the culture of your arena, even though there's, you know, people coming from different places?
Yeah, that was all the work of Bruno and Richie. The atmosphere that we had there in Montreal was probably one of the keys to all of the success they had. Everybody wanted to be there. Everybody was privileged to be there, and everyone was striving for a common goal. And that was all set by Bruno and Richard.
But, you know, like Trent, you asked me about the language, you know, the funny part is that, you know, especially with the Japanese skaters, like Riku, like, I don't know if people realize that, but I've been working with Riku since she's 12 years old. Because I've been doing a lot of, every year I go to Japan and try to promote, again, pairs and try to scout people to do pairs. And, you know, and we do like a mix and match kind of thing once a year. But Riku had a partner, another partner before Ryuchi, and they both could not speak English. Like it was really bad. So you know, like, over the years, I've learned enough Japanese, not to have a conversation, but I can tell you every body member in Japanese or the most important word in Japanese or in English as the coach is, do it again. This I don't want to say. but yeah, Google Translate for sure. But yeah, over the years, you try to pick up a few words and so you can make yourself understand. But somehow, you know, when I'm a bit upset at Riku, all of a sudden she cannot speak English anymore. That's for sure.
That's awesome.
Even today.
That's okay. Mike lived in, how long did you live in Montreal, Mike?
5 or 6 years.
5 or 6 years. Still can't speak too much French.
I got about the same as Bruno's Japanese from teaching skating. I can say all the body parts, how to move, how to move and adjust the body. And outside of that, I don't have too many skills, unfortunately.
That's okay. You know, it's pretty cool to think, you know, it's just a great example of what sport does for the world, right? Obviously right there, you know, we compete against all these people, we become friends with them. You know, Mike and I are very lucky, we have a lot of friends across the world from skating. Bruno has been, you've just talking about it, you guys were very lucky to teach so many different people and from different places, and even with language barriers and everything. So, you know, it's pretty cool. You also got to teach the North Korean pair team. So let's talk about that. You know, how did that come about? And, you know, they did fantastic. So,
well, that's quite a crazy story, but well, it started way back when I used to teach a South Korean team. And I mean, before that, over the years, we've seen North Korean skaters. And as you know, guys, like, they don't always show up to every competition. Sometimes they show up, sometimes they don't. But over, like, way in the past, I remember in Nice, there was a North Korean team. And I mean, they were not very good, but you could see, you know, there was something there, but they were not really good. So anyway, so I'm teaching Alex and Q that represent South Korea. And we're getting ready for the Pyeongchang Olympics. But was it the year before, Mike?
Yes.
The year before, I went to Asian Games and they were there. And I was really impressed. I was really impressed with that team. But at the same time, I could tell that they did not quite understand the rules. They did not quite understand, like, the levels, you know, so they were missing out a lot of points on levels. Not because they couldn't do it. I strongly believe it's because they did not understand. I think part of it is because they did not compete enough, so they would not get enough feedback from technical specialists to adjust their skating. So I don't know, like, I was watching them, and then, so I went, I asked Alex to tell them in Korean, you know, that I was a big fan, you know, I thought they were really good. And so then so that's how we start talking. And then, like, they were, like, very flattered. And then, you know, like, we kind of, like, acknowledge each other the rest of the week. And after that, we went, Worlds was in Finland that year. And that was a tough world for Eric and Megan. You know, they were two-time world champion. Eric had a bad injury. They only decided, after the morning of the practice, if they were going to do the long or not. And the reason why they did the long is to try to qualify 3 spot for the Olympics next year. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Megan and Eric. Good job, guys. Yes.
But I don't think, I think if it would have been any other year, I don't think they would have done the long. I really don't think so. Anyway, so they went out, they did what they could, but it was a tough year. But right after the long, their team leader came up to me and asked me if he could have a meeting with us. Yeah, of course, you know. And so we had a meeting, and then we start talking that they were a huge fan of Megan. They love, like, her energy. They love how, like, they saw how they were, like, she was warming up. And I think we saw them at Four Continents also that year. So we spoke them, they met them at Four Continents. But at Worlds, that's when they asked me for the meeting. And he said, we would love to go and train in Canada with you. I said, that'd be awesome. So he goes, how much would it cost? How much, like, how would it be? So they gave me, like, some rough, like, like, they said, you know, we'll be there, let's say, June 22nd, and we'll come for, like, 2 months. I said, that's great, you know, so how much would it cost? So we did some research, how much it would cost Airbnb, and, you know, and all of that stuff. So no news. They go home, no news. No news, no news. And then all of a sudden I get this one email. Oh, we're still planning to come. I said, awesome. But we're not sure when. I said, well, please let me know when you know when. Because there's because people don't realize this, but they don't have credit cards. So they cannot book a hotel. They cannot book Airbnb from North Korea. Yeah. So everything had to be done through me. They cannot rent a car. So that's the other thing. So, you know, there's so many planning things. So so I think it was like June 18 or 19, something like this. I got this email. So sorry. We could not get visa. We cannot come. I was like, all right, I understand. You know, it was a long shot. It would have been cool. So I'm like, all good. 5 days later, we're in China. We'll be there tomorrow. I'm like, what? So I basically had not even 24 hours to find a place for them and a place for two adults and two skaters. Like, I need an apartment for 2 months. Trent, you've been in Montreal.
Yep.
July, not an easy place to find a place to stay. You know, it's where it's the festival.
And a lot of stuff going on in this.
There's summer, a lot. And, exactly. And back then, Eric and Megan were full-time in St. Julie, which is in the South Shore of Montreal. And they wanted to train. It was very important that they train with Eric and Megan. So that's where I needed to set them up. I could not find a place for them in the South Shore. I tried. And for the budget, I told them too, you know, like, yes, I did find stuff, but it was like quadruple the price of the, because it was so last minute. And finally, one of my former students, Sebastian Wolf, came up to me, and I don't know, somehow he heard and goes, listen, I've got a place in the east end of Montreal. I can go live with my girlfriend. They can rent out my place if you want to. And then he gave me a price. It worked out. But then again, so I got a place to stay. That's great. But how am I going to get there? So every day I would be on the ice giving my lesson in Saint-Léonard and looking at my phone between two lessons and booking them a Uber. So I had to book a Uber every day for them to come to St. Julie and find her. I would either drive them, Megan would drive them after, somebody would drive them back to their hotel, their apartment. It was quite the process, but man, I mean, once they were here, it was a lot of work because they would only want to deal with me. They did not want to deal with any other coaches. They would talk to Megan, obviously. They were nice, the other people, but they did not want to deal as far as coaching or vice versa. It had to go everything through me. So it was a lot of responsibility, but man, what a great experience. Those kids were unbelievable. And it was the beginning of a really good friendship between me and this man. Yeah, that was awesome. But that was just the beginning. That's the crazy part. Because, you know, they came in, they wanted a program done by my sister. And again, I go back to the fact that they were a big fan of Eric and Megan. So Julie thought, you know what, I'm going to use one of the same singer that I use for Eric and Megan. You know, it's kind of a, you know, like a way to bring a bridge between the two teams. And it just happens that the singer is a huge icon in the French Canadian artist. You know, she's a huge French Canadian icon. She's like Celine Dion before Celine Dion, but she never had a career in English, but she is as famous for in Quebec. So, and the reason why I tell you that is because so they go up, they spend the summer, they do summer provincial, quite a good short at summer provincial. A lot of people are like, wow, who are these guys? But you know, like pretty low key, nobody really noticing them. Then all of a sudden I get this email from New York Times that he wants to do an article because the guy went to North Korea before to run a marathon or something like that. So I do a small interview and he goes, anyway, we'll see you at the Olympic qualifying in Oberson. I said, for sure. So still no media, really, just this guy, which was really nice, no problem. Then we go to Oberstdorf, which is like this year is the Olympic qualifying. And then all of a sudden, like when they did qualify, oh my God, like that's when media frenzy started. Like, there were like so many journalists, and they did a special press conference just for them. And 2 minutes before the press conference, their coach says, "No more press conference." Nope, they didn't skate well enough. We don't deserve attention. And like, and there's Peter Crick, you know, if people that know Peter Crick is like going crazy, like, how can you just say so he comes to me, he's like, "Bruno, you gotta talk to them, you know, you got." I was like, "All right, I'll go talk to them." So I finally convinced them to do the press conference, which was pretty good. And after the press conference, you know, she didn't do the jump or something like that. And I made a joke, hopefully the leader won't be too mad at me. You know, I did a stupid joke like this, but off the record, well, the guy wrote it on the newspaper the next day. So that was my first experience that even the press conference is over, it's never over. It's not over. Yeah. So they did qualify, but all this time I did not know. They were not sure if they were going to go to the Olympics. Like, there's so much politics involved. But once they announced that they were going, and somehow in Canada, once the Quebec media, once they figured it out that they were going to skate into this, perform to this song of this icon, all of a sudden, like, all the media was at the ring just to ask, like, what's going on here? So then there was like headlines, like, "Local coach to the service of the leader of North Korea." I'm like, what's going on here? So there was so much, and you know, and it was hard because they wanted to make it such a political thing, which for me it was never politics. You know, it was two amazing kids that I really adore and love working with that they wanted to learn so badly. This man was extremely nice to me, and we always make jokes about this. It's our relationship is not politics. Our relationship is, he was a former skater. It's two people that love our sport, and his dream was to develop pair skating in North Korea. And I, of course, I'm going to help him to do that. You know, like, if you come and ask my help, I'll be more than happy to try to help you. So for us, it was never about politics. I never met their leader. I never had a message from them. But you know, I just wanted them to be as good as it can be. And this guy, I just wanted him to, in a way, I'm not going to lie, I wanted him to look good, so him to have a good life over there also. And that's the thing, when we went to the Olympics, when they finally decide to go, it's like everybody wants to know, like, it's the politics, it's like CNN, it was like name it, you know, like BBC, and the first interview I had, I got like 20 or 30 journalists all over the world, and they're asking me, what are their chances to win a medal? And I'm like, none. And it's like I dropped the bomb on them that I would tell them I had no chance of a medal. And they were like, I thought they were good. I said, they're amazing, but they're just not there yet. And anyway, it was great. It's great experience. A bit overwhelming, you know, like, I learned a lot from this. And after the short program, I remember Eric and Megan are third place after the short. And they're like, okay, Bruno, you have media requests. It's like, okay, is it about Eric and Megan? No. No, it's okay. I'm good. If they want to talk to me, Eric and Megan are third after the short. The North Korean did well, but I think they were 8 or 9, Mike, or 10, something like that.
Around that, yeah.
So I'm like, no, if I'm going to talk, I'm going to talk about Eric and Megan. That was a huge moment. We're talking about a team that had a really tough year in Helsinki, and everybody counted them out. And now they're back, and they're third place. No, I'm going to talk about them. And they're like, okay, let's talk about Eric and Megan. But they would always try to sneak a question to them. But anyway, it was a great experience. But and then I'm the luckiest man in the world. Like, and then the year after, they asked me to go over there. And so yeah, I said yes, and I went, spent almost 2 weeks in North Korea, and it was the most amazing experience. Like the most, it was unbelievable. You know, to see them, their self-discipline, and you know, it's like lucky because not many people can go there, and many people can go there and actually be part of their world. So it was awesome.
What was the training like on the ice there, the venue, the atmosphere? What was happening on the day-to-day training?
Well, the freaky thing, Mike, and that's what the freaky is, I had the exact same schedule that I had back home.
Just completely copied it?
So I started at the same time. And they made sure I was done at the same time I was done at home. I mean, it's awesome. you know, my hotel was awesome. And first morning, I go for breakfast. And all of a sudden, this random person comes, give me a toast. And I get a banana. And I get, what else? An apple. That's weird. So I go up to the rink, and the first thing they ask me, like, did you get your banana? Did you get your apple? I say, yes. And he goes, well, we noticed when you were in Montreal, you had bananas and apple every day. So we made sure you had those. but this is how considerate they were for me, for being there. And the other thing that was very important is Megan was pregnant back then. So they promised me that I could be in contact with Megan every day. So they provided me with like a phone card so I can talk to Megan. So we basically spoke like for 2 or 3 minutes every day, like not very long, but they kept their word, you know, so I could be in contact with Megan every day. So that was awesome. But the rink was very nice. I mean, like it was like typical, like 60s, 70s rink that we have in Quebec, you know. I don't know if for people who are familiar, it looked a lot like the Maurice Richard Arena in Montreal or the, what's the one in Vancouver where they shot the slap shot right beside the Pacific Coliseum? You know, the one with the dome? Yeah.
And they shot Rocky IV there also.
Rocky IV there?
Rocky IV was filmed.
I didn't know Rocky IV was named there. Whoa, yeah, that's cool.
The fight scene was awesome. Was in that building.
Oh, that's sick. Awesome.
So very similar to those type. The only thing is they still use gas on their Zamboni.
Oh, so that would have smelled.
That was pretty nasty.
Yeah.
But so the first session, so basically the morning session, I would work with their senior team and their junior team. And then the afternoon session, I would work with all of their pair teams and some single skaters. Their junior team, so talented. But I go there, I step on the ice, and the first day there's like, and I'm not exaggerating, it's like 40 coach in the stands just to watch and then to ask me question. And then they have this guy who would film me every move I made, like on the ice. And so at first I was like, whoa, they're all there to listen to me and to watch me train them. But I mean, training them is so easy, you know, like you say, okay, you're ready for triple twist. Sure. They go in for a triple twist. You know, there's no, are you sure? I don't know. I don't feel like it today. They're like, you say triple twist? Okay. They go triple twist. But no, I mean, like they were awesome. But then I go in the afternoon, and then from the off ice lift class I did in the morning, the coaches and the young kids were already doing the exact same exercise that I did in the morning. So from the time he taped me in the morning, they went and studied it, and they made sure they would apply already the same exercise. So that was awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You know, like they make sure they follow through with the exercise. But yeah, no, and they made sure I had a day off in the middle because they know that weekends I don't really coach. So they tried to give me a weekend. And I mean, we did like some sightseeing and you know, like that was awesome. Like, that's crazy. Like, it is a different world, but wow. I mean, they it's the people, right? They made it so special, and the kids made it so special.
What kind of food did you eat outside of the apple and banana they had prepared for you? What other kind of food was there?
You know, it's like typical Korean food or Chinese food. I ate really well. And the food was normal. Like totally, totally normal. I was not starving at the end of the week, but obviously there's no 7-Eleven, right? Downstairs, or there's no,
McDonald's anywhere? No McDonald's anywhere?
Not quite.
No.
But you know, to get like chips, and then I made it. So downstairs at the lobby, they had a souvenir shop and they had some kind of a food shop, but I don't know what it was. And I asked the guys that, you know, is there any place that sells chips around here? I like my chips at night. And he's like, sure. What kind of chips do you like? I'm like, I don't know. Like, he goes, what kind? So I don't know. If I would see it, I guess I would decide, but it stayed like this. The next afternoon at lunch, guess what they served me? Fresh, homemade chips.
Which were nice. That's awesome.
But yeah, I know it was cool. And then when I came back home, you know, like I was very excited about, especially the junior team. I mean, like the senior team was great, but man, that junior team was so talented. And I felt we made so much progress with that team. And I really thought, okay, they have something for the future, you know, to go a long way. And they did compete at one junior Grand Prix, which they did quite well. But sadly, they haven't been out since. And as they announced, like I think last week, they're not even an all reserve to qualify. I don't think they're even allowed to qualify. I don't know. Like, one thing that people forget is the last Olympics. There was a lot of North Korean there, but the only people that technically did qualify were the figure skating, the pair team.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I remember there was a lot of negative energy surrounding that, even on Instagram, Facebook. You were getting like not even from reporters, like personal messages, death threats, like you name it, some serious stuff. And if I hadn't have been had a front row seat to watching all this, I wouldn't have gone that far, but I may have understood where that was coming from. But after being a part of it, skating on the ice with Taeyeon and becoming friends with the boy and building that relationship, I completely, completely disagree. And it was nothing but positive could come from them coming over to Canada and training, or you going over there and helping them train. It's zero negative and extremely only upsides, nothing but positive after having a front row seat and creating those relationships with them.
Yeah, well, like, isn't that the whole point of the sports in the Olympics? Like, you got to, that's the whole point. We bring the world together to celebrate the world. We're obviously, yeah, we're doing it over sports and everything, but it's the only time that our world actually really comes together, right? And that you were able to do that even before. That's awesome.
Exactly. And you know what? It's for the human part. You know, it's like we're all human beings, and you know, we're all the same. You know, we all came the same way. We're all going to leave the same way. Different ways, but you know. And you know, it, like you said, it's Trent and Mike, you know, it's we do it for the humans. We're in it for the humans. We're in it for to be the best that we can be, to push ourselves the best that we can be. And that's all they wanted. You know, they didn't come here to, or didn't bring me there to try to correct me or you know, like they just wanted to learn. And you know, just like me personally, I like I'd love to go to China, see how they do things. I'd love to go to Russia, how they do things. You know, like it's to share, and it's again, it's just to share information about the sport. It's very important. It's very interesting to learn from each other, and that's how you create like special bond. You know, like I talking about like those Berlin seminar that I've been doing for years. Like, so I used to do it pretty much on my own. Then they used to provide me with help. You know, like assistant coach, like mainly German coaches. And then 1 year, I think this was the year after I can make it one, their first Worlds. All of a sudden, it's Klimov, and what's her name? You know, Klimov and Ksenia. Skova. Yeah, Ksenia and Klimov. Skolchis shows up at my seminar. And he's hired as an assistant. I'm like, what's going on here? Like, the guy doesn't need to learn from me. He's not there for that. And so he was there, like, as my assistant. I don't like to call him my assistant, but as whatever, my helper. But, man, it took only 2 days that the guards were down. And we became really good friends. You know, and that's the beautiful part of this sport. And once it's to get a chance to know each other and to know each other as a, you know, in a personal level, not into the environment of the stress of the competition or whatever, you know, comes with that territory. But to this day, this guy is a really good friend of mine. And I wish him only but success. And I know he does the same with me. And so, you know, it's sometime, you know, it's the most unexpected situation, the most unexpected people that you end up like really, really good friends with. Because I know back then, like, you know, there was like this rivalry between Ksenia and Megan, you know, and they were fighting for the same spot. But you know what? It's like, whatever.
Yeah, for sure. Now I'm stuck being best friends with this guy over here, eh? But that's all the sport's about. It's bringing people together. We've talked to a lot of, transitioned to retired athletes. And last week we had Patrick on, and that's what he said he remembers the most is the connections he's made and the memories he's made with people. And that's coming from one of the most decorated figure skaters of all time. Like, yeah, it speaks volumes. So, you know, it's pretty cool that we're able to connect through all these different sports. So, you know, you went to, as a coach, you went to the Olympic Games. You know, you got to experience that firsthand. How was your Olympic experience as a coach?
Well, I mean, like, it's funny because I waited all those years. I mean, as a skater, I was alternate. And I was kind of supposed to be on that Olympic team of 2002, you know, like we didn't have good nationals. So I just missed the cut. And then as a coach, two times my skaters were alternate before. So I was so close every single time. And then finally in 2018, I had four pair teams competing in the same event. So it was like, wow, I went right from nothing to have Mike and Kirsten, Eric and Megan, the South Korean and the North Korean. And then even Richard was also working with the Czech. So all of a sudden we have all this connection. So, I mean, it was awesome because one thing you realize is this, it's the same thing as Worlds. You know, it's the same people, the same judges, but into tougher living arrangement, if I may say. but you know, it's something, it was special. Not, you know, it was very special. I mean, like it's, since I watched Gaëtan Boucher winning his medal in Sarajevo in 84, that's what I wanted to go. I wanted to go to the Olympics way back since 84. But you know, it is special. It is a special vibe when you're there. I think if you're lucky to do one, I think it's amazing. I think if you're lucky to do two, it's a bit better because then you learn from the first one. Like, and you can ask your co-host here, Trent, you know, like Mike is the ultimate, you know, energy guy into it. He's got like this. So, you know, he's like, oh, Bruno, you know what I did yesterday? This. And it's wrong. This. And he was so excited. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, it was beautiful to see, but he was so excited to be there and get into the ice. Like, he was like this kid in this candy cane store. You know, like, it was unbelievable. I was like, Mike, calm down.
Mike's never heard that before in his life.
Any activity or anything they were offering in the village to athletes, I took advantage of every single thing they had to offer. I made the most of it.
and for sure, and it was awesome. But you know, like, I'm sure this time around and the next one, I think it'll be a little bit more calm. But yeah, no, I mean, it's a special event, and we're lucky because this one was even extra special because of the two Koreas being together. So I think that was pretty cool. We had a lot of great skate. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, one last question before we get to a little bit more of the fun stuff. Just a quick thing, you know, this is one of the biggest topics, I think, in the past 4 years, especially now. We had as we were just talking, the Olympics, we had a lot of Olympians retire across all sports, and a lot of people are struggling with this right now and finding their way. Do you have any, you know, you've taught a lot of people, you've taught a lot of successful people on and off the ice. Do you have any advice to any athletes that are now transitioning out of sport or getting close to transitioning out of sport? Do you have any advice for those people from people you've learned from or yourself experience as well?
Well, first thing first is retire when you're ready to retire. Don't retire when you think it's other people feels that it's time for you to retire. So let's start right there. You know, like, it's, you know, there's such a topic with age or whatever, you know what I mean, like, or timeline, you know. And, you know, I hate timeline. I hate, you know, that has to be my last year. This I have to go in 4 years. I think there's people are putting too much, like, you know, like these thoughts in their head, like, you know, if you want to retire now, retire now, even if you're not supposed to. If you want to retire in 2 years, whatever. I think it's really important. Like, each athlete ends their journey when they want to. I think that's number one. And if it's on top, if it's on top, if it's not on top, it's not on top. It doesn't matter. Everybody has a different journey and everybody has their own, you know, like their own goals. And I think that's important. You know, I hate when they talk about athletes, oh, they should have retired earlier. So what? You know, they were okay. I don't think, I've never heard, honestly, from the athletes, rarely from the athletes, I did one too many competition. I rarely hear that. Some do, but I hear a lot more, man, I retired way too early. That I've heard that one way more often than the opposite. So anyway, that's the first thing. The other two, the next thing, I think it's, I feel the biggest challenge we're talking about here, top athletes, you know, we're talking about usually the people that make it. We're talking about like Olympic level, world level. It's people that are extremely passionate in what they do and that they're extremely good at what they do. And the biggest challenge is to find something else that you can achieve both. And what I mean by that, often somebody will, after they retire their sporting career, they'll find something they're extremely passionate about, but that doesn't mean they'll be really good at it. Or they'll find something that they're really good at it, but they won't be as passionate. And that's the thing with sport, with most of figure skater anyway that I work with, they were equally as passionate and equally as successful. And this is hard because this is the tough part, is to find that balance of both. So I think it's, there's nothing wrong with trying many things when an athlete retires. There's nothing wrong to take a couple of years to play around. But I also think it's important that even before you retired is to get passionate and interested in other things than what you do. And what I mean by that, it doesn't mean that you have to plan your after career. You know what I mean? Like
stumbling upon disc golf.
But Trent, it's to bring a certain balance. Because if you, and we'll use Mike here because it's the best example that I can think of right now, is I have no clue what Mike's going to do once he retires. Like, I'm really honest. I don't know. I've got a few ideas, but I don't know for a fact. But I can tell you that Mike is extremely passionate of many different things, that he's curious about a lot of different things, that he does spend all of his energy to be the best at the athlete that he can be. But he also takes some time about other interests. So I think it's extremely important to bring some balance into your life. And especially, like we talk about pair skaters, pair skaters are not the 14-year-old Russian girl that we see right now. Like, more even Russian pair skaters, I mean, there's a lot of older ones. So I think if you want to be able to last a long time in this sport, I think it's important to have some good balance. And I think this balance can help you to make the transition and the journey to the next step.
Some wise words there, Bruno. Thank you very much for that. And I'm sure lots of other people, that's something that you can take into anything, not just sport. If you're moving from different career paths or you're not exactly happy with what you're doing, finding something you're passionate about and, trying to be good at it or finding out you're good about it. And if you have the passion for it, you're going to be successful and happy with what you're doing. So it's awesome. All right, Mike.
First off, do you have any book recommendations for our Ice Lab book club, Mr. Marcotte?
The Four Agreements.
The Four Agreements. I think I almost have every single book that our guests have
the Four Agreements is over there. You gave it to me. It's over on my shelf.
I don't have it right now because I gave it to you 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Just started. For I haven't me, finished it yet.
It is the book that changed my life in a positive way. And I think it's great for athletes. I think it's great for relationship. I think it's great to how you see your life, but anybody that reads that book, don't worry. The first chapter is a bit weird, but once that's over, it gets real.
Yes, definitely. Anybody can, anybody and everyone can benefit from reading that book. It's a super quick, short read. It's like 80 pages. You can just smash right through it. And there's something in there for every single person.
But non-related, just for pure entertainment, My Life from Keith Richards.
Never heard
that's
of
what
that
I
one.
Thought you were gonna say. I forgot about Four Agreements. That's what I was waiting for. Keith Richards.
Awesome. Okay, well, let's hit the rapid fire questions. So first question, the Hangry Chicken or Lettuce Love Cafe?
Hangry Chicken.
Yes, Hangry Chicken is good, definitely. If you were not a skating coach, what sport would you like to coach?
Baseball.
I wasn't sure if you were going to pick baseball or hockey. I thought it was going to be a big toss up there.
I know baseball is, I love hockey, but to be honest, I'm more of a Habs fan than a hockey fan.
Okay. Fair.
But
really
I love
want
hockey.
To be a Habs fan.
Yeah, I know, but I love hockey, but baseball, I love everything about baseball for sure. I mean, the it goes way back to my grandfather, to my father. You know, like, he used to take me so many games, and actually I got to live this experience last weekend with my daughter, to take her to our first baseball game, and it really it was such a magical moment, but it really made me miss my dad, that's for sure.
It's awesome. What is your favorite movie of all time?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Top three off the top of your head.
Godfather.
I think it's one of the Goodfellas.
I like it, but yeah. I love it. I love it, but Godfather, like in that type of movie, you know, Godfather 2, Godfather 1, they're both incredible, but you have to stop after Godfather 2.
No, 3. Don't
forget about it. Wow. I mean, and I know I'm going to kick myself in the foot after that. Of course, that movie. I love sport movies. So yeah. I love any sport movie. I would love, including Edge.
The Cutting Edge?
The Cutting Edge, of course, you know. Anyone, which I was part of. But anyway. No. Ouch. I like a lot of biographies, so any movie that talk about people's life, I do love too. I think it's hard to make the people justice when they do those kind of movies, so I kind of like better when it's just the bio and not necessarily a movie taken by another actor.
Did you guys watch the Tiger Woods one?
Yeah.
I haven't watched that one yet. Is it good?
I mean, it's great, but it's great. It just... In my other life, I was an avid golfer, so there's not many things I did not learn. But it makes you, it makes you realize, like, oh my God, this. And I advise every athlete to watch it, every parent to watch it. And I mean, yes, talk about balance, you know, like, it's a recipe. They had the recipe to be the best in the world, but he had to crash at one point. You know, because again, you need some kind of balance. Yeah.
Who is
Mike?
What's your favorite movie? Probably Rocky. Probably Rocky 1 to 5. I like them all. 5 takes all the hate, but I'll still lump it in there. And I like all of them.
They're all great.
What about you, Trent?
It's a tough one for me, honestly. Like, I'm such a huge, like, I love sports movies. I love pretty much everything, but like Avengers Endgame was pretty unreal. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, and I still always love Inception with Leonardo DiCaprio. Mm. That one's so good, but I know every single word to The Nightmare Before Christmas. Beginning to end.
Another movie, Inglourious Bastard. That was
pretty cool. Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Good.
Really, really gory, but great. Quentin Tarantino for you.
That was pretty cool.
Yes. Okay, next question. Who is going to win a cup first? The Leafs or the Habs?
Oh, the Habs. Easy.
Mike threw this question in just because of the fact that I'm a Leafs fan and Bruno's a Habs fan.
The question you should ask is, when's the next time the Leafs will win a playoff series?
This year. It's happening this season. We got a good feeling about it. It's going to be okay.
Good
luck.
It's
going to be okay. We'll see if Detroit gets close even halfway up the standings.
I think Detroit has a better chance of winning a playoff series before the Leafs do. Might be in 4 years, but I think that's about how long the Leafs are going to take to win a series also.
I'm sure there's going to be a bet put on this. I think we bet about the hockey every year, Mike.
But definitely.
I'm a huge Habs fan, but the reality is the Leafs are a victim of the COVID, and people don't realize that. It's all those contracts. I mean, if it was not from COVID, they would not be stuck on the flat cap. so they would have some money to sign some players. And they're like, they're talking about COVID, like they're perfect example of a team that were, you know, their move looked not so good now, but they were not, they were actually a really good move. It just, because of COVID, they cannot, they don't have the money that they expected to have in this year. So, but it seems to be the luck of the Leafs since 1967.
We're still not a Chicago. We're still not like the Cubs. It hasn't been 100 years yet, so we're doing okay.
Exactly.
And for our final question, what is your favorite activity to do with Zoe?
Wow. Wow. Activity. You know, it's she's still at the age that there's almost every day there's in something new, you know, like there's so many new, so many firsts. You know, we took her to our first gymnastic. Swimming, definitely not my favorite one. I do it because I love her and I know it's good for her, but oof, no, thank you. I'm actually looking forward to take her golfing. I love to go to the park with her. I love to walk the dogs with her. Going to the baseball game, I was a bit afraid, but I was surprised how much she loved it. But, you know, I think the she's still figuring out who I am, what the father means compared to her. But no, I mean, like, I think I am lucky to see her, to see, spend a lot of time with her. So I everything is great except swimming. Yeah.
No swimming on the books. That's it.
No.
Awesome. Well, Bruno, thank you so much for jumping on the podcast with us. Thank you for being, you know, a very influential coach within our skating community for a long time. And yeah.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Marcotte. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Thanks for everything you do for me on and off the ice. It's much, much appreciated. And today is September 20th as we are filming this, just after 9 p.m. Polls just closed. I hope everybody got out and voted today.
And before we end this, I just want to quick shout out to both of you guys. I mean, just for the people you are, the way you guys conduct yourself at the rink, both of you, Mike and Trent, and the way the initiative are of doing the podcast. You know, I was talking about balance, other, you know, talk about other interests, you know, and that's why when I see the things that you both do on a daily thing is, talking about transitioning, I'm not worried about the two of you. You know, I know you guys will find your way and find your way in a very passionate way and a very influential way and a very positive way. And I just want to say amazing work, and it's awesome. And you guys are definitely a great gift for our sport, for our federation. And I just want to take the time to say congrats for this podcast and a lot of other things that you guys do. So great job, guys.
Thank you very much, Bruno. And one last thing. So once again, happy Coaches Week. And this podcast is recorded on the 20th, and it will come out on the 22nd, the day after Miss Allison Perkins' birthday. So happy birthday, Allison. We won't say any age or anything, but happy birthday, Allison. Thank you so much again as well for being such an amazing person on and off the ice for us.
Happy birthday, Allison. I hope you had a good one yesterday or tomorrow, whichever
whatever
one
it is. Awesome. So, Ice Labbers, I hope you guys get to work in your labs, and
peace and love, and be kind to one another.
This episode of the Ice Lab Podcast was produced by Trent Michaud and Michael Marinaro.
Music produced by Hugo Schwinard.
If you haven't already, share with your friends and leave a review.
Follow us on Instagram @IceLabPodcast for more information and to stay up to date.